This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, March 4th, 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
KUAF is supported by Ben Owen Shelter Insurance Agency, providing auto, home, and life insurance. 582-4990 for more information.
Ahead on Ozarks, Davy Carter, the Speaker of Arkansas's House of Representatives, talks to Roby Brock about the continuing process to decide funding for the private option.
And Jim DePriest, a Deputy Attorney General for Arkansas, explains how his office combats potential fraud against seniors.
First, reports from the State Highway Department show roadways plagued by ice across the state. Randy Ort, Public Information Officer for the Highway Department, says he expects conditions to remain poor until temperatures rise above freezing for an extended period, likely today or tomorrow. Ort says unlike some other efforts nationally, Arkansas crews are keeping up with winter.
We have not had any problems replenishing our salt supplies up to this point. It has been a very difficult winter. A storm like this one, you know, salt loses its melting properties once temperatures get down below 22, 23 degrees. So not much salt being used in North Arkansas, not much being used here in Central Arkansas right now. We're having to rely on other chemicals such as calcium chloride and magnesium chloride.
Ort suggests residents to remain home if possible. The Highway Department will have crews working around the clock until at least late tonight.
The winter weather prompted Governor Mike Beebe yesterday to issue three emergency proclamations. The proclamations included one declaring a general state of emergency, one aimed at helping utility crews, and one aimed at helping poultry haulers.
And several trash haulers in the area have delayed or suspended trash services on account of slick roads. Trash and recycling collections in Fayetteville are scheduled to resume tomorrow, while waste management services in Springdale and in Van Buren resume today, operating on a one-day delay. And trash and recycling collections in Bentonville have been suspended until further notice.
The first of two trials for former Arkansas Treasurer Martha Schaffner was set to begin yesterday in a Little Rock federal courtroom, but the winter weather that rolled across the state has delayed jury selection in the trial until tomorrow. She faces 14 counts of bribery and extortion for allegedly taking six payments of $6,000 each from a bond broker. The payments were allegedly in exchange for the broker's company receiving the state's investment business. During her arraignment last fall, Schaffner attempted to plead guilty and acknowledged taking money from the broker, but U.S. District Judge Leon Holmes refused to accept the plea as Schaffner disputed the state's assertion for why she took the money. Gwen Moritz, editor of Arkansas Business, has been following the case and says the refused plea will be a factor.
The fact that she made some admissions like that in open court can be used against her and are going to complicate her defense on that. But I think, they're going to present evidence. We've seen a lot of filings in this case that give an idea of just what the prosecution plans to do and give hints of what the defense plans to do. There was some suggestion that even recordings that are going to be submitted in evidence suggest that Martha really didn't understand a lot of the business transactions that her office was doing.
Given the publicity Schaffner's case has received, it may take a few days to see jurors once jury selection begins. Meanwhile, Schaffner will face a second trial on 10 counts of wire fraud that were filed against her last month for allegedly misspending nearly $10,000 in campaign funds.
The Illinois River Watershed Partnership is holding its annual riparian project this weekend. Lauren Ray is the education outreach coordinator for the Illinois River Watershed Partnership. She says riparian buffers along creeks and streams help water quality because trees' root systems help absorb stormwater runoff and filter pollutants before the runoff can reach the streams.
And so those pollutants are going into the soil and getting scrubbed out by nature rather than going directly into our waterways and flowing downstream and potentially contaminating other water bodies downstream. And the trees also help stabilize our stream banks, so they prevent erosion, preventing a lot of sediment from going into our waterways. They provide shade, which cools the water temperature, and cooler water can hold more oxygen. So that's really good for aquatic wildlife that are relying on these creeks and streams.
Ray says the trees planted during the riparian project will be all native species, mostly a variety of oak and pine trees. She says planting native trees includes a number of benefits for the region.
Native trees are better acclimated to Northwest Arkansas and the extreme climate changes that we have year to year, they're better able to survive and they're more resilient, I suppose, because they're from here. They're used to the weather we have. And our local wildlife, they use native trees as their food sources, their habitat for shade. So we really do like to emphasize using native plants when we do plant.
Ray says over the previous 6 years of the Riparian Project, the Illinois River Watershed Partnership and its partners have planted more than 24,000 trees as riparian buffers in the Illinois River watershed.
Forbes magazine has released its latest list of the world's billionaires. And while Bill Gates tops the list with $76 billion in net worth, four members of the Walton family are accounted for in the top 15. Christy Walton ranks as the world's wealthiest woman at number 9 on the list, with a net worth of $36.7 billion, while Jim Walton, the president of Our Best Bank, ranked 10th with his $34.7 billion. Alice Walton came in at 13 on the list with $34.3 billion in net worth, and Rob Walton, chair of the Walmart Board of Directors, ranked 14th with a net worth of $34.2 billion. Combined, the four Waltons have an aggregate net worth of more than $139 billion. John L. Hunt, co-founder of J.B. Hunt Transport Services, ranked 828th on the list of billionaires with a net worth of $2.1 billion.
Mostly clear tonight with lows from 14 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 20 in the Arkansas River Valley. Partly sunny with a 30% chance of rain afternoon tomorrow and highs around 44 degrees. Mostly cloudy tomorrow night with a 40% chance of rain early, then a chance of snow with lows from 23 in northwest Arkansas to 29 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas House of Representatives remains in discussion over the funding for the private option to expand Medicaid coverage to thousands of Arkansans. Last week, supporters of the measure were still two votes shy of the supermajority required to pass. The Senate has already passed the funding with not even one vote to spare. This weekend, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas discussed the private option's fate with the Speaker of the House, Davey Carter.
So let's talk about what has changed this past week. You've been in negotiations. Word has come from various sources that basically maybe we do some sort of limitation on the enrollment period for the private option. Has that gotten you, first of all, is that the gist of what we're going to do, and has it secured the extra votes that you need for passage?
Well, to put it in context, you know, that subject matter arose from discussions that I had with several members that stemmed from a letter that I received from 27 of the House Republicans that that they'd like to sit down and try to discuss the matter and possibly negotiate some other alternative. But in those discussions, open enrollment did come up. Now, that's very complicated. It doesn't sound like it's complicated on its surface, but that is a complicated issue because it has effects on other things. So, you know, we talked about that last week. We're still talking about it now. And if that's something that is involved in the final resolution of the matter, I can't say for sure right now.
But you don't have any commitment to the extra votes that you need to get this thing over the 75% hurdle.
As of today, I would say, I'm not going to comment on that because.
Well, you got to give me some comment on that. Yeah, I mean, you've been saying for weeks that you've been confident. 100% confident was one of the things
that
you said.
And I still am. And I guess the question, as I understood it, was does it relate to the open enrollment issue? And I can't say 100% sure that will be a part.
That may not be the breakthrough to get this, get you guys over the hurdle.
Right,
are there other things being discussed that you think might be one of the changes that could be made?
That is the main subject matter that we're talking about now. But again, Robbie, the issue with that is it's very complicated. And I think the ones that had some interest in pursuing that recognized after we spoke that although on the surface that that's a pretty good idea to have open enrollment, you want to enroll your people in your plan, you want to set the actuary numbers, you want to see what the loss rates were in the previous year and set rates going forward. Although that is on its face a good, you know, a good thing, there are other things that come out of that. For example, what do you do when you're in the blackout period because of the federal laws?
We move people over into straight Medicaid, and then the state's on a hook for 3-to-1 match,
that,
right?
That's right. So you have that issue. You have issues of people, you know, kind of coming on and off. And so it's not as easy. It's not as easy as a concept as it sounds.
Let's talk about, I want to pull up a quote here from State Representative Bruce Westerman. He's the House Majority Leader here. He said that, I think at the end of the day, we've got to negotiate to come up with a solution regardless of what's happened in the past. That's House Majority Leader Bruce Westerman. Yeah, he really hasn't been part of the negotiations. This is the Majority Leader. You guys are the Republicans. You're the majority. Why is there not more, I guess, everybody being on the same page on the Republican Party on this?
Well, that's, there's not a single good answer to that. But, you know, this is certainly one of the most divisive issues that our country's faced in a long, long time. When you really get down to what, you know, we do have a, you know, most members of the, well, it's about 50-50. The Republican caucus, the House Republican caucus is split on the issue. And, you know, the reasoning behind both positions, I'm not, you know, I understand why some of the members think the way they do. And I think they, you know, hopefully understand the way, you know, the reason why I think that we ought to move forward with the private option. But, you know, where the two school thoughts diverge is that, are we going to take control of the issue in the state of Arkansas and do what's best for Arkansans, or do you want to, you know, just continue to fight that anti-Obamacare issue nationally? You know, the overwhelmingly last session, you know, over three-fourths of both chambers supported the earlier option of just taking it and doing what's best for the state. And I would say now, I know it appears that, you know, we don't have a lot of, that there's not a majority support in this chamber, but there are 135 members of the General Assembly, and to date, you know, there are 100 of those 135
sure.
are supporting that.
You just don't have the supermajority of the 75%
right.
in both
chambers. It's tall order.
So will you allow a vote, if you can't reach an agreement, will you allow a vote without the private option funding in there? Can you say that that might be a potential option?
That has not been the will of the chamber to do so. There is an amendment, Representative Bruce Cozart files, there's an amendment on the House floor now that, in effect, would require that. Well, the reality is that there aren't 51 members to even approve the amendment, or perhaps even to take it back on second reading. So the will of the chamber hasn't been to do that. Those things should have been done well before we got into this position. And now, you know, I talked about early on, you know, no negotiations, this and that, and I probably could have said that better in hindsight. But, you know, that part of that stemmed from just the reality that, you know, that's where the votes were. That's where you see it today. You've got 73 members that, you know, aren't going to just walk away from having, you know, the private option. They believe in it. There's been a lot of work into it,
Will you let the legislature go home without a vote on a DHS or a Medicaid budget altogether if you can't find some sort of compromise?
Go home. We're not going to do that. At the end of the day, we're going to get this resolved. The people of Arkansas should have some comfort in that. And I will say this, that even the ones that are still opposing the measure, even up to this day, are beginning to come and recognize that that's not a good option. So I don't see that there's really a chance of that happening.
You think they'll at least cave by the end of the debate?
Well, I wouldn't use the word cave, but I think that, you know, it's just being responsible, and we're here to govern, and I think we've governed well last session. And I think that although this is a heated debate and there's been some difficult times and been some frustrations and heated conversations, that, you know, we're here to govern, and I think we've done a decent job of that, and I think we're going to get this thing done here, perhaps as even as early as tomorrow.
Davey Carter, the Speaker of the Arkansas House, talked with Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas this weekend. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, encouraging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity, coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com.
In about 13 minutes on Ozarks, Dayton Castleman explains how some of his recent work connects deeply to part of the Ozarks past.
I had one older gentleman say, yeah, I got drunk and passed out on that bench right there when I was in high school. I mean, what a story. It's just so kooky. One guy came and said, my dad has a whole scrap board, a huge board full of newspaper clippings and scraps and photographs about this amphitheater at Montanay. And I didn't realize when I started that I was tapping into something that was so, that had this, such a broad collective memory. And that's the exciting part to me, is that this facilitates people, you know, reliving, reminiscing about, and diving back into those memories.
How Coyne Harvey's Montanay inspired an artist decades later. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.
Are three heads better than one? That's a rhetorical question, but they would bring a different shading to music by Bach. He wrote his Goldberg variations for a single pianist to play, but a trio of string players have worked out a clever reinvention. We'll hear that music from a concert in Angel Fire, New Mexico on Tuesday's Performance Today from 8 p.m.
Performance Today, tonight at 8 on KUAF. Many potential scams are easy to spot if you know what you're looking for. Most of us realize a prime minister from Nigeria is not seeking out random email addresses to share a fortune. Con artists, though, stay ahead of the curve. Sunday, the League of Women Voters of Washington County will host a program about recognizing fraud, especially schemes targeting seniors. MetLife, the insurance company, estimates more than $2.5 billion annually stolen from seniors through fraud. Jim DePriest, a deputy attorney general for Arkansas, will be on the panel Sunday at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville. He says an especially successful scam of late has been in the guise of an email sent from a loved one in trouble.
The friend who's overseas vacationing in London or Rome, the email will appear to come from that friend. And therefore does not look like spam. And the story is plausible. That one in particular, I think, has been, scam has been successful. And again, I'm referring to the one where you receive an email from what appears to be a friend, acquaintance, or relative who says they're vacationing overseas and they've lost their wallet and they have to apply for new credit cards, but could you please wire them, you know, $400 so they'll have a place to stay tonight? It's plausible and it does catch people. And then some spam is less, you know, is less plausible, more obvious that it's a scheme. But even then, considering the volume of the spam, even if it's only a tiny percentage of people who fall for it, it still can mean a lot of money to the scammers, and of course, a lot of money to the victims too.
One of the challenges, I understand, in battling this sort of crime and this sort of scam is often the victims are reluctant to tell many people, if anybody, that they have been victims of a scam.
That's true across the board. And again, with respect to senior consumers, we find that one reason why they may be reluctant to come forward and report that they've been scammed and ask for assistance in getting their money back is that they fear losing their independence. If you're in your 70s or 80s and you report getting taken, then maybe, you know, that's a suggestion that you're not as competent as you used to be. You know, it's something, of course, every senior citizen wants to maintain their independence, and they have a full life of experiences, so they're actually pretty sharp consumers overall, but they don't want to appear to be losing their faculties, and that may make them reluctant to come forward.
Let's say I have been scammed and I make contact with your office. What can you do? What's your first step?
First, we encourage consumers to contact us as early as possible if they believe they've been taken in a scam, or even if they see one they want to report to us. We will make every effort to get your money back for you. It depends on the type of scheme that's involved. If it's something like door-to-door magazine sales or itinerant pavers coming to your house, we have a better chance of tracking them down. We have a better chance of getting the money back. If, in fact, it's an online scheme where they have asked you to wire money, it is part of the scam. It's very difficult for us to get the money back that's been wired. It's like putting cash in an envelope, and sending it somewhere. So while we have some opportunity to obtain redress for those consumers, they better contact us right away because it's very difficult to get that sort of money back.
You mentioned the door-to-door magazine salesman. A summer or spring does not go by where someone has come to my door and explained they're working for scholarships and they're from another place. I guess the advice there is to politely close the door and go about your life?
Yes, and of course, you may feel guilty. You want to help
young
person.
They work on that, yeah.
Advance their education. I can assure you that's not what they're doing. They've just been hired to be salesmen and to sell magazine subscriptions. And if they suggest that they represent the magazine company, that's not the truth. They're independent of the magazine companies making these sales. And we find quite often that a person who might even agree to buy one or two magazines finds out that they've been signed up for more, finds out that they've been signed up for a higher fee per month than they actually agreed to pay. So, we don't see much benefit in the door-to-door magazine sales. I'm not saying they're all crooked, but it's very unlikely that you're going to get a bargain there. And please don't believe the story that this young person is working for some sort of scholarship credits. Most of these people who are working there have signed up for what they believe to be sales jobs and then are sent across the country to work door-to-door. They have very little option available to them, often put up in cheap hotels, and if they don't go out and produce that day, they may be cut loose hundreds or even 1,000 miles from home. So there's more than one victim typically in the door-to-door magazine magazine sales scam. But we just don't want our consumers to also be victims.
What is your basic advice for people to avoid being scammed or, at the very least, avoid giving money to something that isn't quite representative of how it's presented?
Don't succumb to pressure. Whether it's a door-to-door sale saying you should sign up today, I'm not going to be back in your neighborhood, or whether it is a charitable scheme calling you or emailing you and asking for money for what appears to be a legitimate charitable cause, or any of these things that suggest to you that action on your part is urgent, high pressure, do it today. The number one thing is to not do it today, to realize that any legitimate offers and opportunities are going to be there not just for today but on a more permanent basis. So just say no to the person knocking on your door. Just say no to the person calling you and asking to contribute to the charity that they identify. And then take your time to check out these offers with our office, with the Better Business Bureau, with other organizations, and only contribute or only buy after you've checked them out and after you have checked out other opportunities to obtain the same goods or services to determine whether you're actually getting a good deal. In that way, you really can save yourself a lot of headache because in most instances, you're going to be able to find out that the offer you were given was not a legitimate offer, and you can thus avoid it so long as you can resist their high-pressure sales tactics.
Do you personally get these emails?
Oh, of course. Zach, get them at the office, at my office email. I mean, you're thinking, okay, you just sent this to the Office of the Attorney General. Of course, the scammer sent it to 2 million addresses, and the Office of the Attorney General happened to have been one of them. Oh, yes, we see most of them, I think. Right here, and of course on my home at home too. So, we see a lot of these.
I mean, are you ever? Do you ever think, well, I should just send this back? Do you know who you've sent this to? But I guess they don't even see the response.
Well, we take a different tact.
Yeah.
We'll search for the IP address and we'll try to find out who they are rather than responding over the internet and then deal with it that way. But yes, it is sometimes it is you have to slap your head and go, they probably shouldn't have sent it here because now we know. What's going on, and we generally rely, of course, on consumers bringing matters to our attention. But it is true that with Internet schemes, it's such a broadly broadcast scam, usually when it's broadcast, that it hits us, too.
Jim DePriest is a deputy attorney general for the state of Arkansas. He'll be part of a program about seniors and fraud that will be at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville. That's Sunday afternoon from 2:30 until 4:30. The program is sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Washington County. It is Tuesday, March 4th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I believe that yesterday I promised you a theme for the week.
You did?
Yesterday we had visual arts.
Mm-hmm.
Today is music.
Mm-hmm.
And although my computer system at work kicks out their name every time as a forbidden word, Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band is performing tonight at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville.
They are a lot of fun. I got to see them last fall, and the washboard player
is such fun.
Amazing. She was
such
so much fun to watch.
There are places in New Orleans where if you're not careful, somebody in a band will hand you a washboard
and
there you are.
On stage.
Yeah.
Really?
There you are.
Yes.
Oh.
And they're one of those things that you look and go, oh, how hard is that? Well,
it's a lot harder than you think.
She was like decked out with like Under Armour gloves.
Did she have the thimbles on her fingertips?
Uh-huh,
yeah,
It is not as easy as it looks like.
Mm.
The band is touring in support of its album Between the Ditches, and also performing tonight will be Isaiah's All-Stars. This is all at 9 o'clock at George's. And Thursday night, Keller Williams, guitarist and touring artist, is back in town, also performing at George's, but a little bit different show. He'll be solo the first half, and in the second set, he'll be joined by a 6-piece funk band called More Than a Little, and they will focus on his new record, surprisingly called Funk. This happens at 9 o'clock Thursday, and tickets are $20 at georgesmajesticlounge.com.
All right. Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
In about 11 minutes on Ozarks, Roseanne Cash talks about her latest CD and her upcoming performance in Fayetteville. If the cool winter weather decides to stick around just a bit longer, there are a number of visual arts events happening throughout the month of March in warm indoor spaces in our listening area. The 15th annual Celebrate Art Showcase is on display this month at the Arts Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. The exhibit, on display tomorrow through March 28th, features the works of Northwest Arkansas students in kindergarten through 8th grade. A reception scheduled for 1 p.m. March 15th. For more information, artscenteroftheozarks.org.
The University of Arkansas Department of Art has a busy month ahead of it. Faith and the Devil, an installation by Leslie Dill, McElroy Family Visiting Professor in the Visual and Performing Arts, will remain on display in the Fine Arts Gallery Center until April 4th. Dill will give a lecture at 6 this evening in the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall. A reception honoring the artist is scheduled for 5 o'clock Thursday evening at the Walton Art Center in conjunction with her exhibition, Divide Light, the Operatic Performance Costumes of Leslie Dill Exhibition. A screening of the opera, Divide Light, will begin at 5:30 in Star Theater. Dill's exhibition in the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville will be on display through April 13th.
Other events for the UA Art Department include a lecture at 5:30 p.m. Thursday evening in Room 203 of the Fine Arts Center by visiting artist Jason Yee. Works by students and professor of photography Mike Pevin will be on display in the gallery exhibition cases from March 24th through April 11th. For details, art.uark.edu.
The 6th Annual Art Club at NWAC member exhibition is on display through April 30th. Admission is free. Some works will be for sale, and any sales will help fund the Art Club's spring field trip. A closing exhibition has been scheduled for 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. April 30th. For more, you can visit facebook.com/NWACC Art Club.
At John Brown University, the annual Student Showcase exhibition is on display through March 20th. Students were allowed to submit entries in the categories of photography, graphic design, fine art, illustration, printmaking, darkroom photography, cinema, and 3D motion. You can visit facebook.com/JBU Visual Arts Department for details.
The Center for Art and Education in Van Buren is hosting its fifth annual 5x5 Gala Saturday. Tickets are $75 and include dinner, wine and spirits, and an original 5x5 artwork. A limited number of tickets will be available at the door. For more information, you can call 474-7767 or email owen@art-ed.org.
Last week, 21C Museum Hotel in Bentonville finished installing its latest exhibition titled Offspring, New Generations in Contemporary Art. According to 21C's website, exploring the power and persistence of ritual in the development of identity, gender, and family and public politics, the sculptures, paintings, photographs, and videos featured in this exhibition employ iconographic imagery to reveal how we live, love, and learn in the 21st century. You can find more information at 21cmuseumhotels.com/Bentonville.
The William S. Paley Collection, A Taste for Modernism, will open March 15th at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. The exhibition will feature more than 60 works from the private collection of William S. Paley, the late founder and guiding spirit of CBS. The exhibit includes works by several French modern masters, including Matisse, Cezanne, and Degas. For more, crystalbridges.org.
In late March, Black Art in America and the Silver Parker Group will present the Bentonville Fine Art Show at the Walmart Visitor Center. The collection will feature creative works from some of the world's preeminent African-American artists, including Herbert Gentry, Kevin Cole, Cora Marshall, Faith Ringgold, and Neji Dorsey, the founder and CEO of Black Art in America, an online social media network for African-American art. The Blytheville native will be on site to provide guided tours as well as interact with guests. Also featured among Dorsey's works will be a rare mixed media portrait of legendary law enforcement officer Bass Reeves, one of the first African Americans to receive a commission as a deputy U.S. Marshal west of the Mississippi. The exhibition will be open to the public from 11 to 7 March 22nd with discussions scheduled for 1 and 6 p.m. The exhibition will also be on view from noon until 5 p.m. March 23rd. Admission free. For more information, visit blackartinamerica.com.
If you missed this next exhibit while it was on display in Springdale last fall, you'll have a chance to view it in the River Valley later this week. Thursday evening, Fort Smith Regional Art Museum will host an opening reception for a multimedia installation titled Coin. The exhibition was created by Dayton Castleman, the museum manager for 21C Museum Hotel in Bentonville. The exhibition was inspired by the story of William Hope Coin Harvey, who founded the resort town of Montanay. Remnants of the Benton County town were submerged when Beaver Lake was created in the 1960s. When Dayton began working on an exhibition for the Arts Center of the Ozarks last year, he drew his inspiration from the word Ozarks. Having traveled to the area a number of times during the past decade, Dayton says he has a distinct recollection of flying over Beaver Lake, which he finds to be a beautiful, serpentine, dragon-like form. While reading about the area, he encountered the story of Montanay.
It was one sentence I ran across that mentioned the, you know, submerged resort town of Montanay, and the exploratory boyish kid in me that liked Indiana Jones and things like that, it just perked my ears up.
According to the Encyclopedia of Arkansas, after becoming convinced that the fall of civilization was imminent, Harvey announced plans in the 1920s for the construction of a pyramid, a 130-foot obelisk that would contain his warning to future generations. He never completed the project, but he did construct an amphitheater that was to have been the pyramid's foyer. For this exhibition, Dayton constructed a pyramid as well as a scaled sculpture of the amphitheater, which measures about 20 feet wide, 7 to 8 feet tall, and 12 feet deep. The sculpture is constructed from 54 feet by 8 feet sheets of a material called coroplast. This corrugated plastic is the same material used to make yard signs and bins post office workers carry. One of the reasons Dayton chose this translucent material is because he wanted to illuminate the sculpture. Over the course of an hour, the structure slowly lights up and then darkens, which Dayton says represents the rising and the falling of Beaver Lake.
While it was submerged in 1966, about once a decade, a significant drought has revealed a lot of it. In a couple of occasions, it's revealed the entire amphitheater. So our memory of the amphitheater and the gravitation toward it for new generations is because of this slow ebbing and flowing of this lake and the altitude of the water. And so it's the lightening and darkening of the amphitheater is intended to allude to that process.
The amphitheater will also have Harvey's own words projected onto it. Dayton used scans of Harvey's writings from the University of Arkansas to create about 30 slides that are projected onto the illuminated sculpture. There are two blank spaces between each slide, so observers have time to watch the lightening and the darkening of the amphitheater.
I do want it to pause and for you to be able to see. Now, it's very slowly lighting or darkening, but I wanted you to be able to perceive that range a little bit. So it's got these beats, so to speak, in the actual projection. And then the slide projector itself, which is on automatic, creates the only sound in the room. And so it creates this cadence. Every 20 seconds you hear that change of the slide projector. And I think that also really helps. The reason I use a slide projector rather than a digital projector, which would have been a lot easier and a lot cheaper. It's hard to get a slide projector and slides these days. But that timekeeping, the ticking of the clock, so to speak, I think the very slow ticking of the clock adds to the temporal nature of it, because this process of revealing and submerging is a decades-long process. It's very slow, and it's unpredictable. Time marches on, and you never quite know when it's going to happen.
Now, there is a bit of a catch with this projection. The projector will be mounted to the wall at Harvey's approximated eye level. By contacting the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale, Dayton learned Harvey was about 5 feet, 8.5 inches tall. After adjusting for the average distance between the top of someone's head and their eyes, Dayton has calculated about where Harvey's eyes would have been, and that's the height at which the projector has been installed. In order to best see Harvey's written words, observers need to stand near the projector.
His ideas were ambitious. All of his ideas were. Some were successful and some weren't. But particularly with this idea, he had trouble finding a lot of support to raise the money to build his apocalyptic time capsule pyramid. And to most of us, that appears pretty obvious why. People weren't buying into the idea that the world is literally about to end imminently. And so by using this projection style, what happens is as you move away from Harvey's vantage point, the planes of the pyramid cause the image to fragment and it becomes incomprehensible. You have to stand near his perspective, so to speak, in order to see and understand what he was trying to do. And if you move away from it, the farther you move away from the sort of stand-in for his presence, the less comprehensible it becomes.
There are a number of aspects to the structure, which Dayton designed as something observers should spend some time with.
The idea is that you would begin with it at complete darkness, and you spend 1 hour with it. And over the course of 1 hour, you see the slides three times. The slides need a little bit of, you have to watch and kind of interpret and put the pieces together, because it's told, the story's told in fragments, but it really is a narrative to me. It's a form of storytelling. It's like a slide theater projected onto this amphitheater. So, you know, most visitors don't give an hour to any work of art at any museum. But that's why I try to bill it as like, but you would give an hour to, say, an interesting documentary, right? It's the same sort of thing. It might require a little more patience than your average documentary, which is designed to hold your attention and to switch a lot. It's a very patient one. It's more like reading a book, you know, for an hour. But I do view it as a temporal piece, as a time-based piece, as opposed to just an object in a space.
Having studied sculpture in grad school and painting as an undergrad, Dayton is comfortable switching from one medium to the next. He also doesn't necessarily approach art as a form of personal expression.
It means that you really become the subject of your work. And I'm really interested in the world out there. I'm fascinated by it. I'm just a curious person, and so I want the world to be the subject of my work. And myself as the artist, I sort of am the conduit of the installation, but it's not personal expression, you know? It's trying to capture who Coyne Harvey was and tell his story, but tell his story in a way that doesn't use language or doesn't use lecture or performance, uses his own words and his own objects. I am interpreting, but all I'm using are a scale model of his things and his words scanned from texts at the University of Arkansas. There's nothing I've invented. All I've invented is the relationship between them and how they interact.
The large structure is too big to stay in his home's single-car garage, which functions as his studio. The amphitheater breaks down into 18 pieces, and in between exhibits, it has been stored in a Bentonville warehouse. Dayton says transporting the piece involves a 26-foot U-Haul truck. While working on this project, Dayton has been struck by how many people have had a story to share about Montanay.
I had one older gentleman say, yeah, I got drunk and passed out on that bench right there when I was in high school. I mean, what a story. It's just so kooky. One guy came and said, my dad has a whole scrapboard, a huge board full of newspaper clippings and scraps and photographs about this amphitheater at Montanay. And I didn't realize when I started that I was tapping into something that was so, that had this such a broad collective memory. And that's the exciting part to me, is that this facilitates people, you know, reliving, reminiscing about, and diving back into those memories. And that excites me.
An opening reception for Coyne is scheduled for 5 to 7 Thursday evening at Fort Smith Regional Art Museum. The event is free for members and $5 for non-members. The exhibition will be on display through May 25th. At 6 p.m. April 10th, Dayton will present a lecture at the museum titled Tilting at Giants, Place, History, and the Artist's Imagination. Admission is free for members and $5 for non-members. For more, you can visit fsram.org.
Neil Harbison is an artist who's never seen a color, but with some help from technology, Neil can hear color.
So it goes orange, then yellow, then green, then turquoise, blue, and violet is the highest.
And he can perceive many more colors than you or me. Stretching our senses, that's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour from NPR, Sunday at noon on KUAF. Roseanne Cash has been awarded Grammys, gold records. She's had 11 number one singles. Her latest CD, The River and the Thread, is her first in 4 years, and it's her first album consisting mostly of her own songs since 2006's Black Cadillac. The new recording is influenced by her roots in the South and her ancestors' homes in Alabama, Tennessee, and Arkansas.
What's the temperature, darling? Now don't stare into the past. There was nothing we could change or fix. It was never gonna last. Now don't stare into those photos. Don't analyze my eyes. We're just a mile or two from Memphis and the rhythm of our lives.
That's the song Etta's Tune from The River and the Thread. Roseanne Cash's tour in support of the new CD includes stops in London, New York, and Dublin. But the next concert is Friday night at Walton Arts Center. It's her first ever, we believe, in Northwest Arkansas. Yesterday, I talked with Ms. Cash about the new CD, a record she says was put together in an old-fashioned way as a single conceptual project, with each song relating to the one before and after.
It definitely was woven, and I hate to use another thread metaphor, but it was woven together. And in fact, we've been performing the songs in sequence as if it were one narrative.
It really holds together. Have you created other albums with that in mind?
Well, I made other albums with the idea that they were, quote, concept albums, that they were of one piece, particularly Black Cadillac and Interiors, you know, they were themed. But nothing that was as specific as this, that I feel like it is an old-fashioned concept album, which is probably the most unfashionable thing I could do right now. But I love the idea. I've loved concept records since I was a kid.
I know that in the digital age where you can, you know, it's kind of the return of the single. You can cherry pick through iTunes or CD Baby
right.
or whatever. But this is one that really benefits, I think, the listener from starting from A Feather Is Not a Bird all the way through the end.
Well, virtually everyone who's heard the record has said that very thing, which to me is a great, great compliment and exactly what John and I set out to do. John is my husband, co-writer, producer, arranger. And that is part, I think that that it does appeal to people who buy my records, that, you know, maybe kids who download singles, it's just not, it's not the way they listen to music anymore. It's not good or bad, but I come from a different era when we listened to albums start to finish, and what ended side one was important, and what began side two was important. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just still like that. And I find that a lot of people like that.
Yeah, and I guess it's even changed from when most of us bought music on vinyl to CD, because you thought
right.
of side one and side two. I guess most of us haven't thought like that for a while.
No, I still think like that, though. And I know a lot of musicians and artists who do. You're in the studio, and you think old school. You go, okay, this would begin side two. And we obsessed over sequencing, over which order the songs would be in.
Well, that shows, because it's hard to imagine, after repeated listenings, that anything but A Feather's Not a Bird would lead this project.
We never, ever considered another song to open the record. In the mix down into the album, we, you know, fiddled with stuff back and forth. But we knew there's this beautiful symmetry to it, actually, because the last line of Feathers Not a Bird is A River Runs Through Me. And then the last line of Money Road, which is the last song on the standard record, ends with The River Stays the Same. And I just thought that was a lovely poetic symmetry to the whole record.
I took the long way home just to end up in your arms. That's why I'm going down to Florence now. I got my pretty dress.
When someone buys a record of an artist, you never know what's going on, so we begin to project. But I hear something very comfortable in every song here in the session. It seems like there are a lot of people who are really comfortable in their skin working together.
Well, I hope that doesn't mean lazy.
No, comfortable. No.
No, comfortable is good. I think that what you're probably hearing is that we've done this a long time. I've been doing this for 35 years, and John and I, as collaborators, we both know what we're good at, and we both know what the other one is good at, and we try to play to each other's strengths. And, you know, that can be a beautiful thing. It was romantic in a very big way.
Well, someone's very good at deciding who should be in a choir, because when the master
yes.
calls the roll, my goodness.
That's a good choir, isn't it? Chris Christopherson, John Prine, Tony Joe White, Rodney Crowell, and Amy Helm. That's a pretty good choir.
Lo, the season may come. Lo, the season may go. One man. someday be made whole. When the master calls the roll, though the storm clouds gather, let the union be made whole. When the master calls the roll,
you know, the day we did that that overdub session to put their voices on the song, they, like, the way these gentlemen greeted each other, you know, they had known each other for decades, and maybe Chris hadn't seen Tony Joe in a long time, and it was such a beautiful thing just to see them greet each other. It was worth the whole day, even if we hadn't recorded one thing. But, you know, it's like a Mount Rushmore sounding choir, so we had to put beautiful Amy Helm on the top just to lighten the load.
The first time I heard that, and I'm looking at the liner notes and I'm seeing who that is a generation that is ahead of you.
Yeah.
Or two, generation or two. And I wonder if you think about, you know, and you mentioned you've been doing this for 30 plus years. Do you think about you and your contemporaries as you continue to create great music and what you might be doing in 15 or 20 or 25 years?
Oh, my friend, I think of that all the time. And I look at people like Chris, who I consider, and Prine, too, that I consider them one of the last of a breed of journeyman musicians, you know, that lone singer-songwriter out there. And of that generation, there's just such beauty and inspiration there. Not to say that there aren't young people who are out doing that and who won't take that their places at some point. Well, I don't know. Nobody's going to take Chris and Prine's places. But I do think about, am I going to be doing this as long as they are? Do I want to keep performing when I'm well into my 70s, nearing 80? I don't know. For me, probably not. I mean, I'll never stop writing songs, ever, but to get out there and worry about my voice at 75, I don't know.
Well, we believe that this will be your Northwest Arkansas debut, and we're very, very excited to see you in just a few days.
I can't wait to get there. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
Roseanne Cash's latest CD is The River and the Thread. She'll perform Friday night at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. For more information, waltonartcenter.org.
KUAF is supported by the fully remodeled and expanded Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Sparks Cafe Soda Fountain daily until 9 p.m., including Sundays. 277-8493 or facebook.com/Walmart Museum for more information.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Blue Eye. Missouri and Arkansas.
Okay.
Both blue eyes.
Fair enough.
Winter has not left.
No, there's still snow, ice, thunder, sleet remnants outside of our office that I can see as we speak.
Yes. And spring will be welcome this year.
Yeah. I mean, you can still make the best of it. A lot of people got
Absolutely.
Snow day or are getting snow days today, too, I guess. So, I mean, I took advantage yesterday and went sledding.
Good for you.
Yeah.
You were safe.
I don't know what that means.
Okay.
I feel like you might have higher levels of safety requirements than I might. So I don't really know how to answer that. I came into the office in one piece today.
Yes, you did.
So I feel.
No abrasions.
That's good. A little sunburned.
Yes.
It's really bright out there. It's one of those things you don't think about. My nose is, I look very festive as far as Rudolph is concerned.
Yes. Tonight is Fat Tuesday.
It is.
Celebrations on Dixon Street. I believe they're still on, as far as I know.
As far as I know.
Yes. Willie Nelson in town tonight.
Is that tonight?
That is tonight. So I will be going to that. I'm very excited.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes. Fat Tuesday with Willie Nelson.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It does sound like a lot of fun when you say it out loud. All right. You and Christina have the show tomorrow.
We do.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Everyone have a good and safe Tuesday. Mm-hmm.